President Barack Obama reached a nuclear arms reduction agreement on Friday with Russian President Dmitry Medvedev. The United States and Russia, who together hoard the vast majority of the world's nuclear arms stockpiles, came to terms after lengthy negotiations following the expiration of the 1991 Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty, or START, last December. Daryl Kimball of the Arms Control Association has called the announced commitment, quote, the first truly post-Cold War nuclear arms reduction treaty. The new agreement between the two countries, which still needs to be ratified by the U.S. Senate and Russia, calls for the reduction of their respective stockpiles down to 1,550 strategic warheads within the next 7 years. That's almost a 50% reduction. Both the U.S. and Russia, however, are estimated to retain thousands of nuclear weapons even after terms of the agreement take effect. In addition to that, several other points of contention remain ahead of the treaty's symbolic signing scheduled for April 8th in Prague, Czech Republic. Here in the U.S., a number of senators have threatened to block ratification of any language that is deemed as binding to future plans for a so-called missile defense system. My guest is Alice Slater. She's director of the Nuclear Age Peace Foundation. Welcome to Uprising, Alice.
I'm delighted to be here.
So first, do you agree that this is a truly significant agreement that has been reached, even if it may remain symbolic, if the U.S. Senate and the Russian government doesn't actually agree to ratify it just on paper? Is it truly significant?
Well, it's significant. Truly, we don't know. But it's good that the U.S. and Russia have gotten back to the table and made an agreement with verification provisions to cut more nuclear weapons. It's not anywhere near what's needed to get a real nuclear disarmament process started because, as you noted, the U.S. and Russia have the vast number of nuclear weapons on the planet. There are 23,000 and 22,000 are in the U.S. and Russia, and the other seven countries only have 1,000 between all of them. So unless the U.S. and Russia get significantly down in numbers, it will be very difficult to say to the others, let's all get together and do a treaty to ban the bomb, which is the next step. You know, this is like one step in the right direction, and it's a good step.
Now, let's take a look at some historic context. What exactly did the 91 Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty require of these two countries?
Well, it was different numbers. I don't recall the numbers, but it's all the numbers mean nothing unless you're working in a context of going to zero. You know, it only took one atomic bomb to destroy the city of Hiroshima and one more to destroy Nagasaki. So having even 10 nuclear weapons is enough to knock out 10 major cities, you know. So the numbers are not important. What's important is the commitment and also the agreement that we're going to be verifying things, because the last agreement that Bush made, this SORT treaty, which we called a sort of treaty, there was not even any provision for verification. So what's very good about what Obama and Medvedev did right now is that they agreed to inspections and being able to verify that we're actually making the cuts, because if we're going to go to zero, we need a process in place where we can verify what people say they're doing.
And this is in line with President Obama's campaign promise for a nuclear weapon-free world. He gave a very powerful speech in Prague not too long ago to an audience of thousands. It was a speech heard around the world, and he made some very lofty promises.
Well, that was wonderful, but don't forget he did qualify, saying perhaps not in my lifetime, and then Hillary Clinton went in one better and said it might take several lifetimes. So our job is to take this wonderful opening that President Obama gave us and keep the pressure on that it should be in his lifetime, because they're coming into this big non-proliferation treaty conference in May, which is why Obama was so anxious to get this done with Medvedev, so that he could come to the non-proliferation treaty and say, look, we're honoring our promise, which we promised to get rid of our nuclear weapons, at least to show some progress. But there's going to be a big push at that conference to move directly to negotiations to eliminate all nuclear weapons. The UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has called for them. The country of Norway said that if the nuclear weapon states don't agree, they might try to convene a conference and start without us, like they did with the landmines and the cluster bombs. Even though the U.S. didn't participate, they wound up banning them, and more and more countries are signing on. So there's a big move now to really move to zero.
So what specifically does the agreement between the two presidents mean if they're going to, at least on paper, reduce the nuclear stockpiles of strategic warheads down to 1,550 each? How then can they still be left with thousands of weapons?
Because when they talk about the strategic deployed warheads, those are the ones that are already on missiles and submarines and ready to be loaded onto bombers. And then they have what they call a hedge pile. I mean, there's a pile of warheads, you know, laying around at in Amarillo, Texas, in different places in Russia, where they're not being used, so they're not counted. But of course, everything has to be counted. And you know, we have civil society and even government agencies have put a pretty accurate number on what we have. We have a very good feeling of what Russia has. So we know what's there. There's nothing stopping our ability to dismantle these things and get rid of them if we had the political will. And this first step by President Obama and Medvedev for the 21st century is good because they laid out the vision, and now it's sort of an opening where people have to come in behind them and press for it. And we're getting a lot of help from some of our allies, like 5 NATO countries have written for a NATO review this April of NATO's nuclear policy because we have 300 nuclear warheads planted in NATO countries that we're not even supposed to have there to get our U.S. nukes out of NATO. This is coming from our allies. The Japanese, 200 Japanese parliamentarians wrote a letter to Obama saying we don't need the nuclear umbrella. They just had a change in their government after 60 years. And one of the big excuses that our military industrial complex gives for maintaining and for refurbishing and rebuilding the bomb is, you know, what are you going to do about our allies like Japan that are counting on our nuclear umbrella? So now Japan wrote and said, we don't need your nuclear umbrella. So there are tremendous openings, and I hope that we can overcome the other forces that are now pushing to spend more money on the nuclear weapons, to refurbish the complex. They're building new buildings in the nuclear weapons complex. I mean, and Obama's going along with this sort of as a, I think he's using it to, the way he did with health care, you know, he's giving the other side what they want so eventually he can get what he wants. I don't think that's a good strategy. I don't think it's going to fool Iran. It's not going to make Iran not want a nuclear weapon, you know.
I'm speaking with Alice Slater, director of the Nuclear Age Peace Foundation. We're talking about the agreement reached by the presidents of the United States and Russia last Friday to reduce their respective stockpiles of strategic warheads down to about 1,500 each within the next 7 years. Now, one of the major obstacles is the United States Senate itself, particularly some senators. Tell us about the opposition that the ratification of this treaty faces in our Congress.
Well, that's another issue. I mean, when we see what happened in the health care debate, he got a letter from 41 Republicans saying that they would not support any kind of treaty if any deal was made to give up missile defense. And, of course, Russia is very concerned that we're now pressing our missiles into Eastern Europe, in Romania, Bulgaria, Poland. So that was a big sticking point in the negotiations and almost broke it up several times. And they finally finessed it and made some mention of the relationship between our weapons and missiles in the preamble, which there is. I mean, the more weapons you have, the more missiles you need to overcome them. And if you have anti-missiles to go against Soviet weapons, and they're going to feel a need to have, I mean, I should say Russian, they're going to feel a need to have more weapons. That's why we had the ABM treaty work so very well, the anti-ballistic missile treaty. We promised not to build missile defenses, so therefore we didn't have to feel compelled to build more nuclear bombs. And of course, Bush just walked out of that treaty, which was a disgrace. And now there's a real missile race going on all over the world.
So on this issue of missile defense, do you think that it may end up being a deal breaker, both on the side of the U.S. Senate and even in the Russian government, who sees, and perhaps rightly so, missile defense as a major threat to their interests in their region?
You know, the deal is made as far as the agreement between the two countries. Whether it gets ratified as a treaty, it could break, you know, the deal in the Duma, because Medvedev's getting pushed back because they didn't get any promises, you know, from the U.S. not to expand the missile bases around Europe. There was no tie-in on that. So, and of course, on this side, although we've always had bipartisan support for nuclear disarmament treaties, you know, this new environment in this country, even though some of the older moderate Republicans like Lugar are going along with this treaty and think it's a good thing, it's going to be, we'll have to wait and see. But Obama can do a lot even if there is no treaty negotiation. I mean, he doesn't have to put in a budget for more nuclear weapons. He doesn't have to build missile defenses. I mean, he can do that as his own policy. He doesn't need congressional approval to do it.
So in the same way that Bush did it, but in the opposite direction.
Right.
So, Alice, at this point, you know, it's interesting when we talk about nuclear weapons, it seems to so many Americans now that the Cold War is over that the nuclear race and the dangers of nuclear weapons are a thing of the past, even though, of course, to people like yourself who have worked on it for a long time, it has been a clear and present danger. Will it take a serious educational campaign, public educational campaign here in the United States to create enough momentum to push the president and Congress in the right direction?
Well, that's what we hope. I mean, we have a huge conference and march in New York City being planned on the eve of the Non-Proliferation Treaty. April 2nd, we'll be marching in New York City. There's going to be a nuclear abolition day on June 5th after the NPT all over the world, from the new international campaign to abolish nuclear weapons. There's a lot of grassroots, plus a good number of allies that feel it's time to move on this. The German Bundestag just voted that to press the United States to move towards negotiations on a nuclear weapons convention. So things might happen at this NPT if we get enough, you know, the Non-Proliferation Treaty meeting this June. You know, there might be enough publicity and enough to get people going. But I'll tell you, it's not enough now just to get rid of nuclear weapons, although that's the biggest danger, that and global warming. But we're not going to get agreement from other countries to get rid of nuclear weapons unless we give up this whole concept of empire. We have bases all over the world. We're spending more on our military budget than all the rest of the countries in the world combined. I mean, we're just like, it's not what we thought America was. We've become an empire, and we're trying to dominate space. Like the last 3 years, Russia and China have submitted a treaty to the UN asking that there be a ban on weapons in space, and every country in the world votes for it except us. Israel abstains. But, I mean, we're the only no vote to ban weapons in space. It's like we are completely captured by this corrupt military-industrial complex.
And, of course, if you talk to those in the Pentagon, it is, you know, there are clearly interests that are dependent on having a lot of taxpayers' dollars being poured into arms proliferation, nuclear arms, continued arms building and deployment. And at a time of economic recession, some argue that that's an economic stimulus. Others argue that it's a waste of money that could go into social services. Is there any linking of the state of the U.S. economy to the nuclear movement to dismantle the U.S.'s nuclear weapons?
Very little. I mean, you know, you hear this crazy, insane call for deficit reductions on every television network and radio station and every politician, but nobody's suggesting we reduce the deficit by not spending money on nuclear weapons. Not alone not even spending, but we're raising it by $1 billion from last year. You know, nobody's talking about that. Nobody's saying, what do we need missiles for? It's just making Russia crazy. Who's going to attack us? I mean, who can reach us with their missiles? The most dangerous thing right now is that the U.S. and Russia each have like 2,000 missiles loaded with nuclear weapons on hair trigger alert, like they're ready to fire in 15 minutes. The worst thing that can happen is a computer glitch or an accident. We're just like living so dangerously and unnecessarily so. I mean, the Cold War's been over. So.
Well, Alice Slater, finally, the treaty's symbolic signing that is scheduled for April 8th in Prague, the same place that President Obama gave his speech for a calling for a nuclear weapons-free world. What do you hope, or what I should say, what do you hope is going to happen? What do you expect will actually happen on April 8th in terms of this particular agreement, which many agree is just the first step in really reducing nuclear arms?
I think it whetted the appetite in the world for peace and nuclear disarmament, and I'm glad it's happening, and I hope there's a huge celebration of this first step because it's a good step. There's nothing that we could criticize about it, and that it'll be like going down the slippery slope, like they opened up the dialogue, they opened up the conversation for nuclear abolition, for less militarism. I mean, all these things are now being discussed in a way that they weren't discussed before, and that we're making it an idea whose time has come. It's like becoming more pressing on the world agenda.
So is there a website you'd like to recommend?
Yes, you can look at www.abolition2000.org. That's the international network working for nuclear abolition. And also in the U.S., www.wagingpeace.org, which is for the Nuclear Age Peace Foundation, has great information on these.
And we link to those from our website later today as well. Alice Slater, I want to thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Alice Slater is director of the Nuclear Age Peace Foundation, and their website is wagingpeace.org. She also recommends abolition2000.org. We'll link to that from our site later today at kpfk.org/uprising.